It's the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP. Now, here's Todd.
All right, welcome once again to the show. First half of the program today, we're going to be talking about something we've done a little story on. You saw in the news a few weeks ago, but it is the restoration of the old Rainier locomotive in Port Angeles, a definite piece of history that has been sitting there just waiting for someone to take it on and get it back to full force. And the plan is to make it into its own park, as well as restoring that locomotive. And we have some folks that are involved in a new effort to do just that in the studio with me, Judy Stipe, who's with the Squim Museum and Arts Center, and certainly somebody who's very well-versed on preserving things like this. So, Judy, it's good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Todd.
And we have on the phone today Corey Delicat, who's the Director of Parks and Rec for the City of Port Angeles, and Scott Golding, who is kind of taken this up as the spearhead, if you will, to get this thing going, because it's going to take some fundraising and some community support to do this as well. So, Corey, I think I'll start with you. Why don't we explain just exactly what's going on with the old Rainier locomotive and where things stand? We briefly talked about this last time we had you on a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so in 2013, when I became director, it was kind of one of the things on my priority list. It's like, we need to get this train restored. But you know, Todd, it all comes down to timing and partnerships. And in 2019, we had some asbestos removed off of the train due to a winter storm. And as me and Scott started talking a couple of years ago, we were able to set aside $50,000 in the 2023 budget to get the rest of the asbestos moved this year. So it's, like I said, it's about the timing and the partnership. It's something that we've been working on for a long time. And when I got the call from Scott, it was just kind of meant to be. And we've kind of just gotten a few other people involved and put an MOU together, a memorandum of understanding with a few folks, and had that approved by city council. And down the road, we're going to have some service clubs help us out as well.
All right, so let's scoot over to Scott then, and let's talk about how you got involved with this, Scott, because you have kind of a unique perspective, and take us through your part of the story and how you got engaged with Corey on finally getting this rolling.
Well, I grew up in Squim. I've been in love with that locomotive since I can remember, probably 4 or 5 years old. After high school, I went to work for Rainier at the mill in Port Angeles. And when it closed, I transferred down to near Jacksonville, Florida, Fernandina Beach. And, I didn't get to see as much of it, but every time I come back to town, I would swing by and take a look. And it's really kind of broken my heart to see the sad state that it's in. It's really rusty and needs a lot of work. And during the pandemic, I became Rainier's historian and started doing a lot of research on things. We're coming up on our company centennial in 2026, and realized that this was something that needed to be done, and I didn't see anybody else stepping up, so I decided to take it on and see what we could do. It's a big project, but like Corey said, with partnerships and the right time, I think we can do it.
We should point out, for those who are totally unfamiliar with the locomotive we're talking about, it's on Lordson Boulevard. Most people around here realize which one it is, but I know there's a lot of new folks to town, and you've seen it there for quite some time. And Corey, that's been gifted to the city since the 1960s, correct?
Yep, it was retired and donated to the city by Rainier in 1960, and it was originally further west on Boulevard, kind of, and then it got moved to its current location, and just kind of been sitting there, kind of needing some TLC for a while.
Judy, I'll go over to you and just talk about, because this really, not only is this kind of a neat locomotive, it is very historic, and there's kind of I think even more than just let's get it spiffed up. This is like one of the last few of this specific type of a steam engine out there.
Yes, this is an old Willamette, and there's very few left. And one of the things that's so important about this, and Port Angeles is going through a beautiful resurgence with so many things coming on, this will not only be great for all of us historians who feel a fiduciary responsibility to take care of this, it is a tourist attraction. train freaks. Yeah. And that's, I mean that in a really good way.
And you know firsthand, you have a lot who stop by at your place down there to see things of power, steam power and such, right?
Yes. And train freaks have maps all over the United States, and they specifically go to Forks, Port Angeles, or wherever to see these. They know the numbers. These people remember all this stuff. When this was brought in 1960, it was shiny and black and gorgeous. And without the energy and the power of people like Scott, who's dedicated his own unpaid time to this, and Corey, who's lived with this the whole time he's been involved in Port Angeles city business, we've all just said, we've got this energy, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Now we're back on track. And we just want to hear the choo-choo again. There's been a lot of things. The local railroad model club is now involved, and they applied to the county for a $2,500 grant to kind of prime the pump, throw a couple bucks in there, see if you can pull some. And it's just going like crazy. And Scott knows how much is going into the PayPal. Corey knows how much the city is dedicating. And we're looking at other options for grants. This Squim Museum just wants our name on this because of the pride. This is the pride. I lived at Hoco Camp. This train was purchased to replace the old Shea in 1947. I lived out there in 49 and 50 in the summer. And this is a love affair with a train, as people have with their cars and their music.
Absolutely. And there's some incredible photos of that train at work out in the West End back in the day.
Absolutely. And, you know, people don't realize these old towns that died, Beaver, Sappho, Pisht, all of this. This was a hub. This was a big deal. The Rainier, when they took over, they chipped all the extra logs and stuff, and they put them into a process where they made different types of material and plastics. And like, I have a boat from Boys in the Boat, and it's covered with what looks like a nylon stocking. This is a process that makes it to look like Dacron or whatever. So this touches everything, and we love it. We love it.
Scott, back over to you for just a bit. What's it going to take to get this restored? I mean, you've always got to set some goals and things. Tell us a bit about what you hope to be raising, and then we'll go into how we're doing it right now.
Sounds good. We think generously $100,000 should cover it. It'll take about $50,000 to $55,000 to do the cosmetic restoration, you know, cleaning up the rust, patching the holes, and then doing a really good paint job on it. Once that's done, we'll build a shelter over the top to protect it. If you've seen the Shea that's on display out in Forks, we're thinking something kind of like that. If you leave the thing uncovered, the paint job's going to last about 10 years, and if you can put a cover over it, 25-30 is not out of the question. So, you know, gives us a lot more time to preserve it and keep it looking great. Once we're done with that, we want to put a log car behind it so that it shows the logging history that it's all about. We'll get some period correct big logs to put on display with it, and then that's kind of the phases that we're working on right now. Later it'll turn into a really nice park with interpretive signs and photos and that sort of thing as well.
Now, Scott, this is a non-profit sort of an effort as well. To explain how that works, because that's an integral part, I know, and maybe Corey, you can chime in on this as well.
Well, one of the partners, as Corey mentioned, is the North Olympic Peninsula Railroaders. They are a local railroad club and kind of branching out into railroad history at this point as well. They have agreed to be the financial partner. They'll accept the donations. And as they're a 501c3 charity, if you make donations, then they are tax deductible.
Yep. Which is sometimes helpful. Very much. Judy's nodding her head, saying very helpful. Very. Right? Scott, from your perspective, and you being becoming the de facto historian, I guess, for Rainier, why is it important in your mind to get this thing, to where it's going to be all spiffed up and a park and all of that?
Well, I think really it's the original intent was that it be a sort of monument to logging and timber industry history. And that's what we'd like to do. If we let it go too much longer, it's really there's going to be some really serious rust and big problems that we'd have to make some serious decisions about whether it's worth it to fix it or not. So that's kind of the reason for the timing. But I know as a kid myself what kid doesn't love locomotives, and it's a really great way to start teaching the history of the area, which, you know, most of it is timber related up until the last few years. So we just want to have it be a nice place that you can come and see some history and enjoy the mechanics and all of that.
All right, Corey, the tough question first. A lot of folks may have said, well, why didn't the city just do this 20 years ago, something like that? And then tell us a bit about this is going to become a park at some point. And we've talked about this in the past, too. I mean, it's great to make parks, but that means somebody has to maintain it. So is there going to be a plan to try to keep this, intact after all this restoration?
Well, to your first question, going into management early 2000s, we pretty much inherited everything that was 30 years old. Right. And so to look at all the facilities we have, we just have to pick one at a time, look for those partnerships and the timing. Like I always say, Todd, you probably heard me say that 100 times. And this is part of it. I mean, you look at the partners that we have in play right now, whether it's individuals, citizens, and now we have a nonprofit that can go out for certain funding that I can't go for the city. But at the same time, there's opportunities for us to look at other grant opportunities to the city's view as well, whether it's lodging tax, things like that. I know the Rotary is going to be very involved at some point. They were not part of the MOU, but they are really the ones that are looking at building the shelter for us and raising funding for that. But also, Steve Zenevic has looked at it to turn it into a little park. And I don't think it's going to be too dramatic because it is a traffic island. But we just want to make it so that eventually it's safe for people to come visit and look at it instead of just parking on the side of the street.
I can speak for folks that I've talked to ever since this news kind of broke. There's been a lot of excitement about this. Mm-hmm. Corey, I know that the city council seemed full behind this when this was brought to them. Mm-hmm. How are things at the city? And then, Scott, maybe your impression. We'll get Judy's as well. First to you, Corey, though.
The first thing I think went a long ways was getting $50,000 set aside at a real estate excess funding, REIT funding, and focusing on getting a contract out to get the rest of the asbestos off of it. That's number one. That's the first thing we got to do. That allows us to look at this fall at certain lodging tax, whether it's city and or county. We were kind of going to start looking at doing some small fundraising here and there. But we kind of came to a conclusion at our last meeting. It's like we need to look for some big chunks of money and get this done sooner rather than later so that we don't come to a point where we can't get it restored.
Exactly. Now, Scott, you mentioned, about $100,000 would get a lot of this done as far as the race. That's a lot of money, but it's also that's not a lot of money in the bigger scheme of things. I think that's pretty doable.
Yeah. We've, as Judy said, we got a $2,500 grant from the County Heritage Advisory Board to kick things off. Rainier, I don't know if you know, Rainier split into two companies a number of years ago. The forestry company that kind of ran the locomotive out in the West End stepped up with a donation of $8,000. We've been fundraising on, we've got a website, and we've been fundraising there and advertising on Facebook and that kind of thing. And we're up now to about $14,000 raised. So,
and that's not
got
too
a long ways to go, but.
But you just started talking about it publicly,
really?
Too, though. So, I mean, that's
right.
Pretty, I think
right.
Getting the word out like this is going to get people starting to call to get in. And Judy, yeah, you're agreeing with that.
Well, and there's so much energy here. We're seeing Corey just thinking, let's do this, not only to get it out of his desk, but he's got the same energy and feeling that Scott does. Scott's looking at from all the time he spent and love it, engine. Scott graduated from Squim High School with one of your people, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all tied. We're just right. a root ball below the surface. We're not necessarily a tree. But when you think about the effort that went into this, it took 7 hours to drive this darn thing around the lake. One truck going backwards. I can't even drive forwards around the lake. But the energy and the future, and of course our past then designates our future, but we really see it in energy, and we see so much going on downtown, and we really tying it into not only our safety, but the people who say, well, Rainier needs to do something. Rainier is doing something. They have their name up there, and it's going to be something that's going to be a very prideful thing when this gets done. It's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. We're entrusted with all of these historic things for a very short time. And being as my family's been here since 1898, we have to do this.
But literally rusting away.
Yes.
That's kind of a good, you know, we're both figurative and literal here when we talk about this piece of history.
But the train is actually shorter from rusting, and it is a safety issue. Yeah. And we really, really feel the power that this is going to happen this time. Yeah. This is it. It came in 1960. What are we waiting for?
The website, because the website's actually really cool. If people want to go in there, there's some great pictures, and you can donate. You can kind of see some of these things we've been referring to. Where can people find out more info for all of this?
Well, actually, Scott has put up the website and put up all the information. We've got a small amount on the Squim Museum's website. Okay. Not as much as we should, but we're putting more. We're in the process right now of being inundated with boys in the boat. So the train is going to still be our primary concern. And I'm on the Heritage, the Clallam County Heritage Board, which I'll leave here and go there. This is the perfect reason why this mandate came from the state to put out money into things like that train. Mm-hmm. She's a beauty, and she just needs a little makeup.
Yep, exactly. In this world of, that's such a priority, but we have so many other things to pay for. And I think Corey will attest to that. He's got a lot of things that there's just not a lot of money to get to them all as well. Scott, the website, describe that, if you will, because it actually is pretty cool. And I'd love to have people. I don't have it in front of me. What is the website again?
That's www.restorethe4.org. And we've got sort of a homepage given the rundown on what the project has to do. Got a page with photos showing some of the things that have happened along the way and pictures of the locomotive, the why do we need to do this project. A good-sized page on the history with some photos of the locomotive in action. We've got a team page listing our donors, and we're always excited to add to that list. And then there's a donate page where you can donate to the fund using PayPal, so online, or you can write a check and drop it in the mail to North Olympic Peninsula Railroad. The address is on that page as well.
And as you pointed out, that's tax deductible too, folks.
Yes.
So if you're looking for a write-off, here's one for you, right? So go ahead, Scott. I interrupted.
Yep. No, that's good. I'm just going to say we've got donations so far from about a dozen U.S. states and one donation all the way from London, England.
Those train.
I'm proud of that one.
Judy calls them the train freaks. You know, as soon as the word gets out, I'm sure you're going to start seeing a lot of that kind of that sort of thing as well. And we mean that affectionately, not in a
very
bad sense.
Affectionately.
Scott, before we go, you know, you being the historian, you watch. You know, you kind of been personally involved with this with your time working for Rainier up here and being with the company for so long. What have you learned anything in putting all of this together in just your research about this train?
Well. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know a lot about it other than that I loved walking past it and seeing it. And, you know, I know the history now, and it's a lot of fun. I didn't really realize the impact that it had on the West End economy and all the people that it gave them jobs and that, you know, took care of it and all that. And, you know, Rainier's coming up on its 100th birthday. I mentioned that, but this thing's birthday is next year as well. So,
Well, that'd be a great birthday present for it, right? Let's have it all, the four all restored by then. How would that be, huh?
Thank you very
much. That's my goal.
That's our goal. That's our energy right now. That's what, thank you, Todd, for saying that. It's how we feel.
Well, it's a great artifact, a great piece of history that's sitting up there. And I think so many of us have driven by there and thought, wow, what can we do? Now, finally, some folks are doing something about it. And I would just encourage people to get over online to Restore the Four, and that's the number 4.org, and take a look at everything that's going on there. Make a donation. And Scott, Corey, Judy, why don't we get together again as we roll through this a bit more, and we can talk some more as the project gets going.
That'd be great, Todd. We appreciate you doing this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's great. As a born and raised guy here, I've seen that for so long and just thought, What's going on with that? Well, now we know. Scott Golding, thanks for joining us. I know busy times for you, but we appreciate you coming on with us.
My pleasure.
And
thanks for having us.
And Corey, thank you as well. We will certainly, I'm sure, be talking with you as this rolls along too. But it's always a pleasure having you on, and I know you're pretty excited about this because of this partnership stuff that's quickly evolving, it sounds like.
It is, and it's a huge... it's a huge thing for the city where we can't do everything for everybody, but together, we work together, we can make things happen. And that's what I'm excited for and can't wait to the ribbon cutting.
Absolutely. And Judy, you just have a knack for getting all of these sort of things happening and done. So it's great you're
involved.
It.
I love it. Everything that we can do in a case like this, and there's so many thank yous, and that will come later, but these two men are putting themselves out for their own time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Judy Stipe from the Squim Museum and Arts Center down in Squim. Good to see you again.
Thanks for stopping by,
and I know you got to run off to get to your heritage meeting here shortly. And again, thanks to Scott Golding there, as well as Corey Delicott from the City of Port Angeles Parks and Rec. And Scott taking this on from the Rainier side of things as the de facto historian and helping put this Restore the Four program together. Again, the website, restorethefour4.org. Head over there, check it out, and make a donation. If you can, we'll get this thing going. We'll have a nice, great artifact and maybe a little park out of the deal when it's all said and done. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more on our program right after this. Want to know what the traffic will be like on the ride home? How about the latest local news? Tune into the afternoon news with Pepper Fisher and find out how the roads are and how the world is. Find us at 101.7 FM in Port Angeles and now at 101.3 FM in Squim. Welcome back to the program. Going to take a break. And when we come back, kind of continuing on a piece of history, that about the Masonic Temple here in Port Angeles is in some desperate needs of repair. And there's an effort to raise some money to help go towards getting that building back up to snuff. It certainly is a landmark here locally. We'll chat about that. A big bike show and swap meet that is this weekend and also what is needed to get the repairs done at the Masonic Lodge in Port Angeles. We'll talk with a couple of folks involved with that right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Now we're sticking with the theme of history a bit today. We talked about restoring the old locomotive in our first half of the show. Now we're going to talk about how we restore and continue a landmark in Port Angeles, and that's the Masonic Temple along Lincoln Street. And one way to do that is to raise some money for some much-needed repairs, and there will be an effort to do that coming up on Saturday with a big swap meet that's being held there, as well as a bike and show and swap meet all combo as well. I have got a couple of folks that are involved with this. We welcome James Rodriguez in and also Ron Wilcox. Ron, I already talked with you. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
You brought along James to talk a bit about kind of what's needed at the Masonic Temple. So maybe we'll start there first. You know, I think a lot of people, myself, I was surprised because I just heard about this recently, that there's a lot of need for some funds to get that facility fixed. I mean, things like a roof, gutters, such things.
Absolutely, right. So you have to understand that the building is more than 100 years old now. It was finished in 1921. So here we are 102 years later, and much like anything else that gets to be about that old, there's a lot of maintenance that's involved. And so, of course, you know, we need to work on the roof. There's roof work that needs to be done that is in the process. There's windows that need to be replaced. There's electrical. There's plumbing. There's all sorts of things on this sort of, like you said, iconic building in Port Angeles that needs support.
The a lot of folks have said, boy, it's just a big building. I mean, that's just in general to keep something like that up. That's got to be a task. I mean, even for your organization,
it's an everyday thing, right? And it starts at the foundation and works all the way up to the top that things need to be paid attention to. And so these kinds of events that we're hoping to draw the public to show them what we are, what we have, will encourage people to not only just contribute to the upkeep of the building, but also to participate as a member of the community. It's a great place to be.
And it is no accident then that you guys have been trying to do a lot more public events there. I think some people have probably noticed there's just quite a few more things that have started to ramp up, I guess, as far as public events.
Right. And fortunately for us, the Lodge has always sort of been an active member of the community, and there's a long history of public events happening at that building. Everything from big public meetings to private gatherings like weddings and birthdays and things like that. So I'd be surprised if there is a member of the community who hasn't had some connection to that building in the past.
I always like to point out Tina Turner was in that building at one point, way back in the day.
Can't beat that.
Yeah, right. All right. she were playing the small venues. Yeah, right. Yeah, so right here in Port Angeles. It just shows you a little bit about how wide-ranging the temple's been as far as a public spot. Okay, now to help raise some money to bring in some dollars for these repairs is an event this weekend. And we have Ron here to talk about this big swap meet and bike show that's happening. So tell us what you're going to do on Saturday.
Well, this is our second annual Masonic Car Bike Show and Swap Meet that's coming up this weekend. And we started off with the idea of the car show. And the car show is a lot of the people with the cars, of course, they like to show the cars and they like to do things for charity. So we came up with that idea. And then, some of these car shows, we take our cars and show them off and stuff, and we get kind of held captive there, and it ends up being a long day. So we came up with the idea of a swap meet to where it's something we can do in the meantime of the car show. We can go in and do something different not only look for car parts or items for us, but there's also things for the ladies and for other people involved. So the swap meet starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it goes to 7 o'clock at night, and the car show starts at 2 p.m. and goes to 7 p.m.
And you're a car guy.
Yes.
So tell us about what's going to happen with the car show. What are you guys expecting with that part?
Okay, we're expecting we're expecting to fill the lot. We really are. And there's going to be all kinds of different cars, whether it's hot rods, muscle cars, motorcycles, imports, rat rods. Anybody's welcome to bring their car. It is a fundraiser. And there's going to be music. There's a barbecue. And, of course, there's a swap meet and stuff. Now, what's neat about this fundraiser is that we have sponsors, Tranco Transmissions, Fryer Insurance Company, Windlemere Real Estate, and Lakeside Industries. They're our main sponsors, and they've put up the money to put this on. So everything that we needed to put this on is already paid for. And in that way, we can say that if you come to the car show, if you come to the fundraiser, and if you spend $10, that $10 goes directly to the building. You know, nothing goes to the organization. This is for the building. This is most of us here in Port Angeles, we don't think of this as being owned by the Freemasons. We think of it as that's our building.
Yeah, it's a public venue. That's, I think, most people look at it that way, right? Yeah, and I think, in fact, I've run into people say, well, isn't that a city building? Yeah, and that's not the case. It's a very private building that has to be just like anybody else's business building, for that matter. Mm-hmm. You have, for folks who want to show up, you got a ton of raffle stuff, though, that's part of this. Tell us a bit about what people can enter to win.
Oh, geez, we have 60 items in the raffle, and there'll be a series of drawings. Now, each ticket only costs $2, so every half hour or so, there'll be seven drawings, and that $2 ticket will have a chance all the way up to the top raffle item, which is a pellet smoker barbecue that was donated by Caldwell Bankers. We also have a couple waterfront rooms for two at Red Lion. We have Black Ball Ferry tickets round trip to. We have many, many $100. We have $100, for example, gift certificate from Laurel Lanes, and I keep telling people some kid's going to have a heck of a birthday party, you know.
And yeah, and it goes on. I'm just the whole list here. You've got to, you name it. There's probably about a $50 gift certificate to it around here. It looks like
it's just amazing how much the community is supporting this project. And when you get public support like this for a project, and then it has a steamroller effect, and that's what we're looking forward for.
Did you find when you told people about the predicament, if you will, that building's in, that they were more apt to, wait a minute, sign me up? Because I think a lot of folks, as we just alluded to, don't realize that there's a need to get that building some needed repairs.
No, most of them knew. You can drive by and see that most of it needed repairs. And the first thing in doing this was to show the public that, you can drive by now and see the lawn is kept mowed, the edges are trimmed and stuff like that. And so it's a big deal to earn the public's trust, you know, and it's not rocket science to see that the place needs work. But I think the big thing on getting people on board was the fact that 100% of the money raised is going to the building.
Yeah.
That was the big thing.
James, talk a bit about, you know, the struggles, if you will, of trying to keep the building going. Did the pandemic also affect things like typical organizations? I mean, it's tough to get people out for, you know, we all kind of lost a couple of years in a lot of ways.
That's true. And, you know, the building's not any different. As everybody in town likely experienced, things slowed down. Not many public events were happening during those couple of years, and so the rental income that was available to the building was decreased. Thankfully, there are a lot of dedicated Freemasons here in Port Angeles that were able to maintain the building, to keep the spirit alive, to keep the building going, and to make the repairs that were necessary during that time to keep things going. So we're at the point now where we're happy to be able to invite the public back to return and participate to the at the building with public events like this one. So the more people can participate, the better. The lodge building, for example, is open every Friday night for bingo on a regular basis. And I'd be surprised if somebody were listening here and wanted a tour of that building. If they were to come on a Friday night, they're likely to find a member who'd be perfectly happy to
show them around
and show them exactly what we're talking about here today.
Is there a priority of repairs that have to be done? I mean, as you got the checklist, I guess. I'm sure it's probably longer than you'd like it to be, but what's the big ticket? What needs to get done first?
Well, the roof is obviously always a big ticket item. Yeah. It's a high dollar piece of the property, and so if that fails, then everything underneath it is likely to suffer as well. And so that's really our first priority for getting things fixed. Of course, there's just the regular things around the building as well, though, which contribute a lot to the appearance of the community, such as our windows, our columns, you know, brickwork, things like that that need to be done as well. And so it's an ongoing process. It's not likely ever to be done. It'll be something that is always needing to be paid attention to.
Is it safe to say that you have made a concerted effort from the, you know, the Mason standpoint of things to, you know, kind of prioritize this now? I mean, like, I don't want to say we've made a new committee or anything like that, but has that been something that's really been, you know, this is thing one now?
Yes, and it's been an ongoing effort over the years, but it perhaps is a bit more concentrated recently because of the state of the building. And there is a board for the building that has been in charge of repairs over the years and has done a great job at making sure that we're able to continue to use it. But, of course, need to focus a bit more on these high-dollar projects.
Exactly. Right. Anybody that's got any sort of a building, eventually a roof has to be replaced. Mm-hmm. It doesn't last forever. And those tend to be a little pricey. Ron?
Yeah, speaking of the roof, right now there's a company that's contracted. They'll be here in September. It's going to take them 3 days to completely clean the gutters, clean the roof, put the moss killer and stuff on it, get the gutters working the way they're supposed to, and then the roof will be evaluated. Also, the front window is in is already in the stages of that one that's seen from the street. It's going to be fixed. Of course, it's not an easy matter to be able to replace them windows and get them back looking exactly the way they originally were. You just don't put a modern window in an old building like that. Last year, from last year's car show, they were able to, some of the money helped replace the plumbing in the upstairs men's bathroom that hadn't functioned in years. It helped buy a pressure washer. It helped replace or do some work on the sign. Also, when the gutters get done at the same time, pigeon spikes are going to be put in underneath the roof of the porch, which anybody can see is badly needed, and some painting work will be done in there. So we're in the process already of starting to get things done.
You know, James, that's an interesting point Ron brings up about you can't just slap a new window in. I mean, some of the repairs become a bit tricky just because of the age of the building.
And it depends on what the damage is. But, like, for example, if there's damage to the trim around a window, those were hand-done in 1921. Right. And it's rare to be able to find something similar that isn't handcrafted again. So, you know, we're reliant on these fundraising opportunities to try to match what was done 102 years ago, and all of the money that went into the building back then was raised by Freemasons, by the members of the lodge. And so we're kind of carrying on that tradition today and trying to get back to where they started.
All right. You mentioned trying to get more rental into the building is one way. The swap meet and car show is another way. Anything mm-hmm. else planned to try to maybe do some more active fundraising?
Well, the more we can get out into the community, the better, of course. We do have some hope that there may be grants available in the future to assist with the financial needs of the building. But really, it's a matter of connecting with the people in this community who may not remember or even realize that they have a connection to this Masonic building. For example, if they go to our website, it's pamasonic.org, not Panasonic, but pamasonic.org, and go to the lodge's part of that website, you can see a list of our past masters of the lodge and their photos, except for a few that we don't have. And I'd encourage people to go and find their relatives. I mean, there are some well-known names on that list, including people like Morse and Lotzkazel and others who were leaders of the lodge back in those days. And so there are a lot of connections that people have. Restoring those connections, I think, are really key to the future of that building.
You know, it's a unique building. It's 102 years old, as you mentioned. And you know what? I have to say, I mean, there's a lot of lodges around and temples around the place, but not as many have that sort of an iconic sort of spot in a town like this.
It's unusual. So I come from a larger city in Texas, and when I first came to Port Angeles, I was amazed at this building.
This is here? Right?
I did not expect that building to be in this city, and it's just so impressive and so such a part of this community and of the way it presents itself to the world that it's something that you want to support and you want to encourage people to make use of, because it's something that not every town or a small town such as Port Angeles would even have access to. Mm-hmm. But we have it here because of the efforts of those Masons back in the 1920s.
Right. Ron, you want to add something to that?
Just to invite the people to come by Saturday and enjoy the day, buy some raffle tickets, and the amount of gift certificates we have at the local restaurants is amazing. Enjoy the barbecue. Even the meat for the barbecue is supplied by Evergreen Meats.
So that's
the soft drinks are supplied by Peninsula Bottling Company. So once again, the community is really coming together to this, and you can come in and see the inside of the building. The building will be open, and of course, because the swap meet will be going on in there. And I'd like to add, if anybody would like to make a tax a donation, a tax exempt donation to the building, they can do so during the event. They just go up to the car registration booth, and you can make a donation to the tax-deductible donation right there at the event.
All right. I thank both of you for coming in. It's such an iconic building, and it really is a piece of Port Angeles that I think folks don't realize You drive by it all the time, but if that wasn't there, we'd be missing something. Seriously. So, exactly. Get in there, take a look at the building. Maybe it's a good spot for you to have a family reunion, something like that coming up. You can rent it. But even sooner than that, come by on Saturday for the big car show swap meet. It starts at 9 in the morning. It goes till 7 o'clock. The actual car show part is 2 until 7. But the swap meet starts at 9. Thanks, James Rodriguez. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, sir.
I'm sure we'll talk some more about this effort to get things all up to snuff down there at the Masonic Temple in the future. Ron, good luck on the event on Saturday.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in as well. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more on our program right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.